Hello, thanks once again for taking the time to download and listen to our podcast from CelticUnderground.net. I'm Harry Brady, and this week we have a very, very special Resolution 12 update. So everybody listening to this will have been following the Craig White trial on the internet and revelled in it. And immediately that trial finished, people then started using the term Res 12. So I thought, actually what we needed to do is have a podcast where we go back, very brief synopsis at the start, because Res 12 has become a catch-all phrase for everything to do with the Rangers stuff amongst Celtic and football fans and wider football fans. So I thought we need to get right back to basics, cover that off, and then see what the Craig White court case brought out. So I'm joined by Old Heat to tell me now, let's get back to basics. What is Res 12?
I think actually it's more to say what was Res 12.
Right.
Because Res 12 goes back to 2013, and it quite simply said, we think there's something dodgy about the process under which that licence was issued. We've got information that we've seen that was loaded onto the internet with the Charlie fakeovers that gives us reason to believe it was dodgy. UEFA, the club financial control body, they have the power to obtain documentation, or to obtain that documentation, and tell us whether we're right or we're wrong.
Mm-hmm.
And that's all we were asking for, was just to say, go and have a look at this, see what took place, and tell us whether the licence was issued under UEFA's rules.
So it was a resolution at the Celtic AGM of 2013 to say, Celtic, can you go and speak to UEFA and see what went on?
What went on, yeah.
And at that point, everybody knows that Celtic had some chats, and the guys to do with Res 12, Resolution 12, said, okay, we will not push this forward at the 2013 AGM.
Yeah. What actually happened was, we said, look, if you... what Celtic officially said in the annual report, they said, as they answer each resolution, whether they support it or not, I can't remember all the detail, but then it says, we think it's unnecessary.
Mm-hmm.
And the reason they thought it was unnecessary is because they'd actually asked the SFA in 2011, look, we're getting, sheriff officers turned up in the middle of that year, or the middle of this year, and we had people asking questions about, was that licence properly granted? And again, the detail of what the SFA told Celtic, I haven't seen that letter myself, but proxies have, and basically it was all granted, everything was done properly.
Mm-hmm.
But what we were saying to them was, look, that tells us it wasn't.
And that Celtic had asked UEFA before you'd put, Celtic had asked the SFA before 2013.
They'd actually asked the SFA in December 2011, coincidentally almost at the same point in time that Regan was writing to Rangers and saying, is it okay if I put out this, this bit of information about why it was granted? And we just said, don't. So Celtic said, no, it's not necessary. And we said to them, look, this is going to come out. We never thought it would take 5 years.
Mm-hmm.
This is going to come out, and you're going to look really bad to your support if you haven't seen what we've shown you, don't do anything about it. And fine, we'll deal with the SFA on it. Then there was about a year where we went backwards and forwards to the SFA, and it actually reached a point where I thought, this is done.
Mm-hmm.
Because this should go to UEFA now.
Yeah.
Because to me, there's enough evidence there to tell us that UEFA should be involved. The things that were found out, SFA, well, we hadn't seen the 20th of May letter, the demand. Well, if you hadn't seen it, how could you know if it was overdue or not? And then later on, we might have seen it. So what you kept getting, it was the same stuff that you were getting in 2011 when it first became out that there was a wee tax bill.
Mm-hmm.
That hadn't crystallised. We now know it had.
Mm-hmm.
It was in dispute. No, it wasn't. So there was more of the same obfuscation.
Yeah.
Fogging the issue.
So the whole point about this was, the SFA grant a licence based on the information they know, in this particular instance, first of all, by effectively midnight on the 31st of March.
Yes.
What financial information we know by midnight the 31st of March, and one of the things that prevents you getting a licence to play European football is if you owe your tax authorities money.
And owing the tax authorities money is the basic point. Owing them the money and admitting you own the money, and that's when you accept a liability, because that's what you're saying, I admit I owe you the money. Right?
And this relates to the wee tax case.
This is just the wee tax case. The big tax case was still under appeal and all the rest of it. Yep. The wee tax case was, for the reason they came out in court, and I think in the picture it did come out in court, was the liability was accepted because HMRC were able to show that when they made inquiries to find out if there was side letters for the bone floor, way back in 2005, Rangers says that they didn't have any, when in fact they had. They also had more side letters under the big tax case at the same time, because they were starting to use that at that point, but nevertheless, they were told. And the HMRC said that's either negligence or fraud.
Mm-hmm.
We don't have to prove fraud to pursue payment outside of the normal 6 years. So at worst it was fraudulent. What you're doing, what you're denying the existence of those letters was fraudulent, or it was negligent. But we're not going to go and try and prove fraud, because the process it takes, but we're pretty sure it's negligent and we're in safe grounds and we're going to charge you for it. So that was basically the basis, that the argument that took place. And again, we know that in November 2010, that's when HMRC first wrote to Rangers and said, hey, that scheme you used, an FTT said against Aberdeen Asset Management, said that's an illegal setup you've got there, you know. So interestingly enough, there was no side letters. Aberdeen Asset Management, there's nothing to do with side letters, it just was an illegal scheme.
Uh-huh. Right? Well, and we'll get to the court case in a minute, but that's really one of the things. And the court case has been a bit of all your Christmases come at once, the people behind Rest 12, because all the, you had most of the pieces of the jigsaw with a handful missing.
Yeah, yeah.
And somebody came along at the court case and said, here's a handful of pieces, and actually, you're building a bigger jigsaw. It's even bigger than you thought, and here's all the other pieces to do with it. That's more or less...
That's more or less what it is. And I think, actually, the point I think that needs to be brought out here is, Resolution 12 is actually says was. It's matured into something different, and what it's about is honesty.
Mm-hmm.
The whole process, you have a process that lies in self-certification. If you're not going to be honest in what you put forward, it's not worth a candle. So the whole point is that it's about honesty. And whilst I would say you don't need Resolution 12 to go to UEFA to show what's now been shown,
mm-hmm.
you nevertheless have to say to UEFA, how tight are your rules? How do we make sure that this can't happen again?
It's a bit like going to court. Did you kill that guy? No, fine.
Aye. You know, UEFA need to have a look at it to say, what actually took place? How did it happen? How can we make sure? Or even they might say, we know what happened and we've actually tightened the rules.
Mm-hmm.
Even getting that back would be an assurance that something was done. But as it stands, it's just like, nothing to see here, move on.
So, 2013, you guys go, you say to Celtic, we need you to investigate how Rangers were granted a European licence.
We want you to ask the UEFA CCFCB to find out how the licence was granted, using the powers that they have to obtain the stuff that tells us that there's something dodgy about it.
And Celtic said, we've already asked about that, so we don't need to have this particular resolution.
Celtic, at the time they said it was unnecessary, hadn't got that information, or, if you like, hadn't digested that information. Mm-hmm. That's maybe more accurate way of taking it. I hadn't actually, wait a minute, this is important, you know.
And it was all about, as we said, 31st of March, and what was interesting was Rangers' accounts were late that year.
Well, you know yourself, this is one of your bugbears away
by
back
12
then.
Hours.
Yes, aye.
Anybody who knows anything about a company publishing accounts, if you could have published your accounts at 10 o'clock one day, you could have published them at 10 o'clock at night the day before.
Aye. So, you know, that was one of your bugbears. And that was certainly the case. And I think what's happened is, and it goes back to it's now moved into the honesty, territory, is that the licence was granted on the basis, as we understand it, that was a potential liability and they were discussing it. And that wasn't the case.
Well, that's what I was going to say. So the whole thing has been to this point, to the court case, was everybody saying, OK, there was a bill in,
aye,
but we didn't think it was a real bill.
Aye, aye.
And we'd gone back to them and said, prove it's a real bill,
aye,
or prove that it's what you're, yeah, saying it is. And so consequently, it wasn't tax, an outstanding liability, therefore we didn't fulfil the rules,
yeah,
and so we didn't lie to the SFA, and the SFA could turn around and say, well, we didn't lie in the submission because it hadn't crystallised, being the term that people used to say, no, it's gone beyond doubt, you owe that money. And then there was always dubiety thereafter, because this was the first year that self-certification came in for a second self-certification in the June.
That's right.
And certainly between that March and the June submission, it was in the public domain that Rangers owed that money.
Yes, yeah. I mean, that was it. And the interesting thing was, in the interim accounts, Alistair Johnson says it was potential and subject to discussion. It's like wording. The thing about the wording was, reading it, that told me that it hadn't been, the liability hadn't been accepted, and they were still talking to HMRC about it. And that wasn't true. And one of the things that came out in court, although it was a general point made about fraud,
mm-hmm,
the deputy apprentice did say something on the lines that fraud is where you gain dishonesty, where there's a dishonest statement from which you've gained, you know, your practical outcome.
Yes.
That dishonest statement, and it was dishonest because it wasn't true at the 31st of March. That dishonest statement meant that Rangers then got a practical outcome, which is access to Champions League money. And again, what came out in court was, their survival depended on it.
And that's what I was going to say. Donald Finlay's defence, I mean, the amazing thing about the Craig White court case, aye, is the defence didn't need to have a single witness,
that's
because
true,
the prosecution was so good at proving that Craig White was not the guilty party.
Yes, I mean, that's a nice way of putting it.
But Donald Finlay's whole point, mm-hmm, was, this was a basket case organisation,
yeah,
that was already cheating,
mm-hmm,
and doing whatever it needed to do,
yeah,
because it was trading insolvently.
Yeah.
The directors were already discussing administration and possibly liquidation.
Yeah.
And the only way that they could possibly trade was to achieve European football the following summer.
So, yes.
And Donald Finlay's whole defence of Craig White was, this was a basket case, failed organisation, trading insolvently,
right,
which needed to do whatever it needed to do to achieve Champions League football to be able to keep trading,
yeah,
whether Craig White had bought it over or not.
Right. But here's a significant point. Craig White wasn't in charge of Rangers at the 31st of March.
Correct.
He took over on the 6th of May. So what you've got is, at the granting point under Article 50, da-di-da, is that the evidence is hadn't crystallised. There is no defence that after the 31st of March it had nothing to do with the SFA, which is what Regan told Richard Gordon in one of the Sports Ground broadcasts later on.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's palpably, the UEFA letter back to the Res 12 folk basically said, no, there's an ongoing look at things as well. And the other side of it is, UEFA weren't actually told who was granted a licence until the 26th of May, which was 20 days after Craig White had taken over.
Yeah.
So what you've got is, the basis on which the licence was granted was it was potential, and the court case tells us it wasn't. The SFA says it hadn't crystallised. We know now that it had. The justifications for saying, okay, even if it's crystallised, if it's been paid since,
mm-hmm,
then we're okay. So had it been paid between 31st of March and 26th of May, it wouldn't have been overdue payable, clearly.
Yeah.
If there was written confirmation from HMRC to postpone payment, then, at the 31st of March, where the HMRC said, look, okay, we've got a tax bill, we've had discussions on it, this is how we're going to go about getting it paid, and we agree. But that had to be in writing, and that has gone to the cash level with Malaga.
Mm-hmm.
So that's not me saying it. That actually is in CAS papers.
Yeah.
I said, it has to be in writing, and it has to be signed by the creditor. Because if it's not, any club could say, I've spoken to HMRC, and this is what they told us.
Mm-hmm. So yeah, you can't just say, we've had a phone call. Again, getting back to my point earlier, did you kill the guy? No, I didn't. Fine.
And here's the point as well. What there was a discussion when a libel is accepted. Look, we've not got the money to pay you. I'm making that's my what this one. But it was clear Rangers didn't have the money to pay. The bank weren't going to let that, you know, the bank were trying to get rid of
it. Yeah, as came out in the court case.
If Rangers had paid it, that would be more money the bank were with. So the bank didn't want that. It didn't, you know, couldn't, you know, wouldn't bankroll it. The McGill, who was the guy who was a witness at the court, McGill was the bloke in the conversations with HMRC, and basically, you know, it was, look, we're being taken over, and there's an undertaking, there's going to be an undertaking in the takeover to pay it. That never ever, I expected that to be dealt with at the court, it never ever did, because, mm-hmm. because it was never paid.
Yep.
And Craig White never paid it. So I can quite see why Finlay wouldn't go that road, because it would actually have shown
because
people.
And the reason you don't pay tax bills if you know your company's in a dodgy wicket is because, well, you know you're going to go bust anyway. Or into administration anyway, so what's the point in just wasting £3 million?
But even in the realms of the court case, I actually expected that to come out, that you'd an undertaking to pay the £1.7 million to refurbish the whatever it was that needed down in the ground, give £5 million towards players, and to pay the £2.8 million tax bill. And that was then the undertaking. And what actually we said in court, it says the wee tax bill, which is appealed. Not appealed. Right. Actually, you know, but put this way, I'm going by the tweet from court.
Yeah.
What was said there was the wee tax case had been appealed. So that went to the jury. The tax case hadn't been appealed. They eventually, under Craig White now, they eventually, as part of this ongoing keep them away. Under Craig White, they said, can we appeal it? What basis can we appeal? HMRC, do you appeal that? It's vexatious. We know why it was there, you know, and you've missed your chance to appeal. You'll need to seek leave to appeal. And by November 2011, Rangers or HMRC knew whether leave to appeal had been granted.
Mm-hmm.
So there's no question that there was an appeal taking place, you know. And there's plenty of documentation there that tells you that it was all part of how can we get away from having to pay this bill, because they didn't have the money, you know. So what you've got is the people in charge of Rangers at the 31st of March, they get past the hurdle because, as you said, and as Finlay said at court, that money was for a survival. I always think it's football karma,
mm-hmm.
that Malmo and Maribor put them out, because had the licence not been granted, Rangers would have gone out of business much earlier than what it did.
Yep.
And as you say, traders insolvent, how many creditors
would Craig White have bought it for a pound? There's a big question, mm-hmm. that we'll never know. Would Craig White have even bought it for the pound if the SFA had told Rangers, you're not getting a European licence?
I can't answer it because I don't know.
No, but
what
but
mindset would have been in the sense.
But in this whole picture of, we know that what came out in the court case, and despite the distraction tactics of most of the Scottish press and the SFA, the day after the Craig White court case, came out of the court case was David Murray killed Rangers Football Club.
Yes.
Alistair Johnson participated. If we get back to Alistair Johnson talked about murder, he was an accessory to murder, as was Dave King, as was Paul Murray.
Aye.
Those three were accessories to the murder by David Murray of Rangers Football Club. Yeah. Using the terminology they all used through the court case, the institution of Rangers Football Club was hung, drawn and quartered, was tortured to death by David Murray. And they were accessories to the crime.
That's the case. And what did Finlay say about the Rangers board at the time? They were incompetent, whatever, you know, you know exact words, but they weren't up to the task. So that's one of the points.
And getting back to your getting back to your resolution 12 point.
Yeah.
Because this is where it tips.
Yes.
To the honesty of, this is where it tips from being a Celtic team to the SFA to UEFA about what went on here, into wait a minute, there's either been fraud or lies, fraud, lies or negligence have happened by people in the game.
Yeah.
This is the point. What you were asking UEFA to determine, we now know through your diligence and the court case, or you and your colleagues' diligence in the court case.
Definitely my colleagues' diligence.
We now know that there was fraud committed on Scottish football.
Based on Prentice's definition of fraud.
Yes, based on the definition of fraud in the court case, people intentionally took actions to provide false information to the SFA,
yeah,
to allow Rangers to get a licence, because Rangers were in an insolvent business without European football.
Yeah.
So they had to do whatever was necessary to get European football, which meant getting a European licence. Yes. Well, not just for European football, a Champions League run was a necessary thing. And forgive me if I'm wrong, but UEFA have sort of drawn a line under things by saying, and anyway, that club went bust, so what does it matter?
That actually is one of the interesting points, because let's park the fact that the granting is dubious at best. There's two other points in June and September, and submission goes forward. And the submissions that went forward, both of them basically carried the same story. It's under discussion. It's, you know, it's in dispute. It's postponed. You know, none of which was true.
Mm-hmm.
These are statements that were put forward. Now, the SFA themselves are saying, look, it wasn't our job to check any of that after the 31st of March.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that was just that was sort of down to the FA check. So, in September 2011, there's a conversation between the SFA and UEFA. Has to be a conversation, because the SFA chap says to the Rangers chap, he says, good news, UEFA have verbally accepted it. Now,
so September 2011, after
the sheriff offers have called,
after Craig White is after the 31st of cheating, 31st of March withholding information, after Craig White has bought it,
and after he's put forward a submission under the Article 66 at that point, that basically says status postponed, you know, we're still talking about it and stuff like that. That goes to UEFA. Now, by the time UEFA look at it, you're in September, you're past August when the tax officers have turned up, and that's when the collections went off. Everybody thought, okay, if it's been granted, it's been granted, everything's okay. When tax officers turn, or when sheriff officers turn and collect taxing, hang on a minute, you don't do that unless it's overdue. When was it overdue? I mean, I know when it was overdue.
Mm-hmm.
It should have been paid in 2001, 2 and 3.
Again, getting back to the court case, one of the things that Donald Finlay took out as a defence of Craig White was Rangers had accepted in November 2010, or people within the Murray Group and Rangers had accepted in November 2010 that this was due, because one of his criticisms and ways of saying, you guys were just bad business people before Craig White got in, because the clock was ticking.
That's right.
His very phrase was the clock was ticking on the interest payments on the wee tax case. Rangers' whole defence of it wasn't due. Well, if it wasn't due, why were you getting paid charged interest on it?
Yeah. I mean, that's one of the aspects of it. But again, it goes back to the fact they didn't have the money to pay it.
Yes.
And they were trying to get out, by that time, November 2010, the writing was on the wall. And one of the things was, even without, if you like, what's happened the last 5 years, it's confirmed, if you like, a view a lot of people hold, was that Rangers' business model depended on Champions League money. There was this poor Tony Mowbray, in that sense, happened to be the manager in the year of the honest mistakes, when Craig Levein was, it's all about Rangers. And you're looking at it and saying, you know, if I throw a bowling ball and it curves, I know it's curving because there's a reason, there's a bias.
Mm-hmm.
And the bias wasn't sectarian or anything like that. In that sense, it just was pure business. It was the business model required Champions League money in order to be a strong Rangers.
And the statements, I mean, this is to me, there's incriminating evidence that you have found, there's incriminating evidence that came out in the court case.
Yeah.
And then there is just the statements made by people that when you, that they are the gel that holds the thought process together as to why all of this was done, which is not necessarily 40 years ago it would have been for sectarian reasons.
Aye.
Today the statements that came out when Rangers went bust about Armageddon and our game's finished was purely based, their decision making was based on the utter fear that the ball was bust in Scottish football if the institution of Rangers Football Club went bust.
Aye.
So at best the people in authority said, do you know what, I'm going to turn a blind eye to your bending of the rules here.
Yeah.
Breaking of the rules, and they were justified to themselves by saying you're bending the rules. we're not killing anyone by saying that, you know, because verbally you've told us they're going to appeal, yeah. So we're not going to look into it. I'm not going to ask questions I don't want the answer to.
Now, here's the point, actually. It's another point about Resolution 12. Actually, Resolution 12 never really is about Rangers. It's about the governance of the game, mm-hmm. right? And it was about accountability. And there is no accountability in Scottish football. The folk who don't hold positions in it can't mm-hmm. do anything about changing anything. That Scottish Football Supporters Association that sort of has, you know, it's been building in the background, plans to become that voice. We need something like that mm-hmm. in order to be able to sort of say, look, we understand the commercial constraints. We understand that the name needs to be competitive, but it doesn't have to be competitive the way that destroyed it. Mm-hmm. In fact, it's insanity to try to make it to go back and rebuild. What nearly killed us off. So let's look at other ways of doing that. And I think that's it. And I think as well, the supporters have become much more aware, understandable of the business of football, to be able to divorce the emotional attachment we've got, and actually say rationally, if we don't deal with the rational side, we won't have anything to emotionally attach ourselves to. Mm-hmm. Because there'll be no football at all, because nobody will believe in it, it's dishonest, and it's self-destruct. So you do need to have the balances. So Resolution 12 was about that accountability aspect, and the way the accountability has actually been done here is through shareholders. Because what shareholders are saying, look, we think our share value was probably devalued as a result of that decision.
Look at the Celtic share value today.
Aye.
When we are winning everything.
Yeah, yeah.
That's your evidence that the share value was well, impacted upon.
Good point, actually. But back then, that was when, if you like, that was the locus of our point, which was, look, it's not just decisions that affect the clubs. These decisions affect the supporters and the shareholders in the clubs.
And not just us. Hearts and Hibs. And Aberdeen and Motherwell.
Everybody, those decisions affect all the clubs in when we're in. And the shareholders as well. Is that although the PLC model means that the guy with I don't mean that's dreadful. Dermot Desmond, who's the largest, I think, shareholder, mm-hmm. His views on it would probably depend on how much information he had and whether he reached the same conclusion or not. And had that happened, they might have turned around and said, hang on a minute, we can't let this go and tackle it. But although he might then have said, but in the bigger picture, and I can understand that, but I'll put it this way, I've never been in his shoes and rich enough to look at that bigger picture. At the end of the day, it's much better for Celtic if this isn't highlighted, and our shared value will go up anyway, mm-hmm. and we don't have to be dependent on the Rangers board and stuff like that. It doesn't alter the fact that shareholders individually, they've got their own reasons and values and thought processes, and through that EGM process, that's the way that they make them known. And if enough people sort of subscribe to that, and over 100 did in signing the resolution, we're actually making a point. Look, SFA, you've got more than just the club to be accountable, because the club are accountable to us. And that's the core point of the whole thing. It's about accountability.
And the other aspect you talked about...
And football's fine. It doesn't want it.
And you talk about the financial impact on shareholders, and you're right in that shareholders are the stakeholder with the greatest legal right to challenge this.
Yes.
But the stakeholders of Scottish football who have the moral right to challenge this are all people who pay to go and watch the game. And I might use an exaggerated analogy. But imagine if the WWE wrestling told everybody it was real.
Aye.
And everybody believed it was real. Right. I mean we know we knew. But imagine everybody believed it was real. And then you found out that it was a scripted storyline product.
Yeah.
People, every single person who ever paid for a pay-per-view or went to a WWE event would be allowed to go along and say, you defrauded me. Because you told me that this was a sporting event when actually it wasn't,
uh-huh.
because that guy was predetermined to win.
Yes. Now see that point. When I go along to watch games now, I go to a local bar, where, down to the coast where I am, and I've been talking to a couple of chaps, and one chap says to me, he says, I was based in Liverpool at the time, and I used to travel up. He says, and the money that I put in, and actually I said, you know something, I said, during the years you're talking about, my kids played football, my daughter played, my two sons played. He says, I actually didn't go to the games. I says, I went to watch my kids play and support them and like that. I says, but, so I don't have that sense of angst that you've got in the sense of the amount of money that I put in. But what came across with him, and this is one of the things I think that the Celtic board need to take on board, there's a lot of supporters who are angry that they spent money, and don't forget, they took their displeasure out against the Celtic board as well.
Yeah, we played the Celtic board.
They were victims of it too. You know, I mean, Peter Lawlor was you know, castigated, you know, for not competing against Rangers and not spending the money.
Brian Quinn getting booed on the park.
Exactly. So we basically sort of almost turned on ourselves. But getting back to that point, there is a sense of anger, and I think that has to be addressed by the club itself. It's addressed. It has to be accepted that exists. And if they don't tackle it, it's always going to be there. And if the Rangers business model builds back up, and we've got 9 titles in a row, but in the 10th one we lose out, and everybody knows that we were never going to get it because skullduggery that took place 2000 to 2011 was back at play. The people who didn't do anything about making sure that skullduggery can't happen again, that's when it all changes.
To quote Samuel L. Jackson from Pulp Fiction, it is a righteous anger that the Celtic supporters have, and the Hearts fans have, and the Hibs fans have.
Yeah.
Hearts and Hibs might never have gone down to the second tier of Scottish football.
That's a point.
If they'd never been cheated on this, because that's what they were.
They
were cheated on it by, as you said, going back to the whole of the last century, the whole of this century.
Yeah, 2000 onwards. As soon as
the old Rangers existed, they cheated by not paying their taxes in order to fund players to use their. David Murray and Alec McLeish have both said, Murray in court, Murray at the tribunal when he was called something else, and Alec McLeish on TV, if we didn't pay for those players, we wouldn't have won the trophies.
Lord Nimmo Smith, though, he didn't, you know, he never put, you know, did anybody actually say, look, by the way, have you seen what the Dubai, why Rangers use DBT?
The defence,
it's in the FTT, you know, you actually.
The defence of Lord Nimmo Smith's position, which is why I think the ultimate day of reckoning for all of this falls after the EBT case.
Yes,
because the defence of Lord Nimmo Smith is EBTs, as they used them at the time that he did the inquiry, were legal.
Yeah.
Consequently, Rangers did not gain an advantage because they weren't doing something that wasn't open to everybody else. So just because they chose not to do it, it's not Rangers' fault.
That's the big tax case.
That's the big tax case.
They were illegal DBTs.
Correct.
So it's a question of scale.
Yes, but then that then gets to the nub of the point that you made earlier. So what we've established, what has been established over time is Rangers cheated. Rangers knew that they had an insolvent business. They needed European Champions League football to survive. And David Murray was finished as a businessman. He owed £1 billion to the bank.
And he was incentivised by the bank.
Yes. So David Murray owed £1 billion to the bank. And the bank, at the time of the crash, turned round and said, you're done for. He probably feared losing his knighthood, possibly even feared jail, because the Murray Group pension fund still owes over £20 million.
Yeah.
And the bank sat down with him, and they didn't want the egg in their face because there was David Murray and 4 other people who, between them, owed £10 billion. The bank was £10 billion, or was
fact?
No, between them was £4 billion. It was 25% of the bank's bailout, which is 4 entities: Murray Group, Kenmore Group, and I can't remember the other two. Between them, 25%. Murray was 10% of the bank's total bailout level.
Yeah.
So the bank had a motivation to not say, we've been total fannies and lent a diddy too much money. So the bank had their issue with it.
Mm-hmm.
the bank then passes, and like in any tier of management, where one guy gets a kicking and passes the kicking down to the next guy and passes and makes the kicking more severe each tier to try and pass the buck down the line, the bank then turned around and said to David Murray, you're a problem for us. David Murray says, I want to retain my Murray Metals because that was my very first business. Well, I tell you what, see the most high pro, see the thing that shines the biggest torch onto our dealings with you. It's Rangers. Get rid of Rangers, because that moves the torchlight away from us and you and the £1 billion. And then what we'll be able to do is do a debt for equity swap, even though the equity is worth zero, or it's worth minus zero. We'll do a debt for equity swap on £800 million of debt that the taxpayer can swallow, that you've stolen out of the taxpayer's pocket. This taxpayer can swallow £800 million that they'll never know about because the spotlight's moved. So we need to find a diddy guy to put the spotlight on. The £800 million then, we'll do debt for equity, and then we'll just shut down the Murray Group at £200 million of debt, and nobody will really notice. You keep your knighthood, we don't look like diddies, and we find a fall guy guy. And somebody comes along and says, I've found a diddy. His name's Craig White. And they say, brilliant, you force that deal through, keep your business afloat until he buys it, and we'll say no more. He then has, unfortunately, is, must be in early stage dementia because he can't remember anything. But the rest of his board can remember that they were all discussing administration and possibly liquidation. And they cheated on taxes, because if they didn't cheat on taxes, they wouldn't have got Champions League football. The deal with White would have collapsed. They wouldn't have got Champions League football, and the egg would have been on all their faces. And even to this day, the Scottish press will go along with the Craig White being a bad guy. When what this court case exhibited was, David Murray killed Rangers, and accessories to the murder were Alistair Johnson, Paul Murray and Dave King. And other people, and this is the nub of it, we now have, past as fit and proper, Dave King and Paul Murray running a new football club in Glasgow. We have Alistair Johnson, who's just been joined the board of that new the three accessory to murder people have just joined the board of the club impersonating the dead club, and that's been allowed. The people in charge, Stuart Regan was in charge of the SFA then and is in charge of the SFA now. There are other people connected with Rangers and the SFA then who are still connected with the SFA now.
Because back when the licence was granted, there was Campbell Ogilvie. There was Campbell Ogilvie, who everybody knows, who instigated the illegal tax, right?
He instigated
and received a big tax case payment, but actually was conflicted and stepped out, and because of that he didn't actually make it clear to Lord Nimmo Smith that actually no, there was legal stuff as well.
Let's just part that for a minute and use different terminology. A guy was at one business and got a big chunk of money paid to him tax free and facilitated other people getting paid money tax free by writing letters that were not allowed to be written, then moves over to the governing body when the governing body finds out about it.
Now, they clarify that. There is no evidence that Campbell Ogilvie actually ever played part in the administration of the EBTs. You know, there's nothing to actually... What we do know is he started it off, he was on the remuneration board, they adopted EBTs as a matter of remuneration policy, right? In the first EBT, there's never been any evidence that Craig Moore got a side letter. The first side letter went to De Boer. Second one to Flo. After that, they moved from the wee tax case EBTs to the big tax EBTs, and that's when the side letters came in. Now, in 2004, Andrew Dixon, who's now a director as well, Rangers, and on one of the boards, SFA or SPL boards, I can't remember, Andrew Dixon took charge of the players' files, and in the FTT, he gave testimony to the first FTT with Dr. Poon and the others. His testimony was he took responsibility and he handled the files. A year after that happened, that's when HMRC wrote and said, have you got side letters from the Bone Flow relating to the V-Tax case? And the answer was, there doesn't seem to be any in the files. You know, so, you know, if the person responsible for the files couldn't find them, and by that time, they'd moved to the big tax case, and I don't know who was signed, but they had signed players mm-hmm. under the big tax case with side letters. So what you've got is players' files with side letters in them, HMRC write in and say, if you get side letters for these two, well, we can't find any.
Was it not that every single player who played in the winning game against House when they won the league in 2005 had a side letter?
True, but I'm talking about 2005, mm-hmm. right? So from 2003 to 2005, any players that Rangers signed using EBTs with side letters, there had to be side letters in files. So yep. 2005, you get a set of files, there should be side letters in them.
Mm-hmm.
And the HMRC only asked, they only asked for the side letters in De Boer and Flo because they had an indication in 2005 that they were using that scheme.
Yep.
And must have an indication about the side letters. HMRC didn't know about the other side letters until the police raid in 2007.
Mm-hmm.
And that's when it became, they probably suspected they existed, but that's when it came.
So what you're saying is HMRC said, have you got this? And people within Rangers said no.
Yeah.
And the people who, and there are people currently at the new Rangers and in the SFA
yeah.
who were at Rangers
yeah.
at that time.
So
we can't say for certain that they participated in that fraud or lie
yeah.
or misrepresentation,
yeah. Yeah.
but they were at the entity when it happened.
They were part of the setup, and what is clear, and there was a good sort of comment on it, and on the Quick News blog the other day by Brogan, who you know is well versed in all the ins and outs issues. Was it from 2000, whatever it is, there has been a pattern of non-disclosure
mm-hmm.
all the way through. And it's a bit like, prove you haven't got weapons of mass destruction, you know.
Yeah.
If you don't disclose something, people don't know it exists. So how do they prove it exists?
Yeah.
You know, there's that element to it. So if you don't disclose it, it's a bit like, well, I'm not telling any lies. Well, actually, you are, you know. So Catholic when it's a sin of omission, isn't it?
Yes.
Yeah, right, you know. Maybe that's the problem. That's the problem we have.
See what happens when you don't have Catholics in your club.
You know, but there's a pattern of non-disclosure all the way through to 2012, moving away for resolution 12, when Harper McLeod write to Rangers, Duff and Phelps, and say, can you give us everything relating to EBTs? And it wasn't the big tax EBTs, it was all EBTs with side letters, which immediately brought Flo and De Boer into the play.
Mm-hmm.
All EBTs with side letters. Can you send that information to us? And any other relating documentation? And then it did say, and all the documentation from HMRC relating to the big tax case. But nevertheless, they wanted everything relating to them. And somehow or other, well, actually, I think I know why. The Flow side letter dated the 23rd of November was supplied. But that's because Flow actually migrated from the wee tax EBT to the big tax ETB after they left Rangers.
Right.
He still was getting paid money as mm-hmm. part of the transfer away to Sunderland, I think he went.
Yep.
And he was getting paid under the big tax case. And that actually came out at the FTT that Flow had a side letter. It just so happened that the side letter related to the wee one and not the big one, right? You know, he had a side letter that related to the wee tax case. Whether he'd won related to the big tax case, I'm not quite sure, but that's, if you like, it was in the public domain, a realisation that Flo had a side letter. Nobody knew that De Boer had a side letter, and that's what do you call it, that was the thing that actually said, you know, that caused, you know, that caused the inquiry. It said, hang on a minute, when you said give us everything from the 1st of July 99 or whatever it was when the SPL started, but you actually started the commission going at the 23rd of November, lots of people are saying, oh, that was deliberately kept away. I can understand why they're saying it, but it's equally possible that they actually said, look, we started the 23rd of November because that's the first side letter was provided. But the side letter for De Boer was there as well. More importantly, all the HMRC documents from November and February that were mentioned in court,
yep.
they were there as well. So they weren't supplied. non-disclosure. That non-disclosure actually changed the whole terms of reference of the Nimmo Smith inquiry, because had that information been disclosed, it couldn't have been this is a question of misregistration. It would have been a question of paying players via an illegal means that other clubs couldn't use.
Yep.
Which is what it will be if the Supreme Court fined for HMRC. And an awful lot will depend on that. If that happens, then the scale of what we're talking about becomes industrial.
Yeah, it becomes enormous. From the start of the millennium until they went bust, they cheated every week.
There's evidence that, what do you call it, they set out in this course to obtain sporting advantage that other clubs didn't have. And they had to break registration rules. But then you got the little nicety of, well, all they did was break registration rules. You know, because that's what the charge was.
Clubs have been chopped out of the Scottish Cup because the form's supposed to have two signatures and they've only signed one page.
I used to run an amateur team. You know, the team lines and that, you were like crossing every I, dotting every T. Because you knew that if you didn't, there was a fair chance you're out. You know, and the defence that, oh, nobody actually knew at the time, therefore it was okay. I can buy that, but Nimmo Smith actually said this is a registration issue.
Mm-hmm.
It would have to be more serious than that, you know. And if in fact the terms of reference of Nimmo Smith had been different, I'm not actually sure what the charge would have been. What rule would have been broken? It wouldn't have been you broke the registration rules by not sending the side letters. It would have been you were paying players by a means other clubs couldn't use, and you were using taxpayers' money to do that.
Mm-hmm.
Basically, that's fraud as well. You know, it comes into that territory.
Well,
and nobody conceived in writing the rules that this would happen.
Your point about honesty as well comes into this, in that. Is Lord Nimmo Smith looking at they were just incompetent?
Aye.
They just were not very good at filling in the forms. They didn't think the side letters mattered. Do you know, all that type of thing. But what's come out in the court case, and what's come out through all of the you and your colleagues' investigations, is, as you've just said, and as David Murray said, and Alec McLeish said, their business model required them to overspend just to compete with us. David, and how do you overspend without going bust? Well, first of all, you find a series of people to invest in your business by promising floating casinos and all that type of stuff. Then when you run out of those people because there's enough evidence that three or four people have had been shafted, then, and your club's up at £80 million, you do things like, as came out in the Mark Daly documentary, where Rangers did a rights issue underwritten by David Murray to £55 million, and the week before the rights issue, one other part of the Murray Group borrows £55 million from the bank.
Yeah.
So a bit like your credit card's maxed up and you're due to make the minimum, or nearly maxed up, you're due to make the minimum payment, you take your credit card to the hole in the wall machine to take cash out to then go to the bank to then pay.
Yes, exactly. It's the same thing.
And then when you're running out of all of those things, you then just stop paying your taxes.
Aye.
I mean, wasn't it they stopped paying their taxes? It was a more sophisticated way, but they found a way of being able to pay people without paying the tax on it.
What I thought about it was the analogy.
But it's intentional. The point I was going to make is, all of this is the point you've made that Brogan Rogan drew out in the Celtic Quick News piece. All of this demonstrates that it wasn't incompetence. And so they get a slap on the wrist and get told that you're a bunch of diddies.
It was policy.
It was a business strategy. This was their business strategy to compete with us was to cheat.
Basically, I mean, that's one way of putting it. Can I actually bring something in here as well to get a bit of balance?
Balance?
Because it would look as if we're only, you know, we're sort of, well, when I say balance, maybe a bit another way. Ranger supporters claim their victims as well, and they actually claim, well, the SFA did not help us, when in point of fact we know that they did everything they possibly could to make sure that Rangers didn't go bust. Had Rangers beaten Malmo and entered they would have got the first tranche of UEFA payment in October. HMRC were quite aware that if Rangers get into the Champions League, they would get paid.
Mm-hmm.
HMRC are no bother, but the FIF pay rules. They're just quite right looking for the taxpayer, yeah. Right, you know. So they're saying, okay, you know, let's have a mixed meeting, but we'll have it after the Champions League game's out of the way, mm-hmm. so as we'll know where we are, right, you know. So HMRC are, they've got an interest in Rangers yeah. qualifying. Now, had Rangers been through the qualifying stages, I think it's quite conceivable that an agreement would have been reached to allow Rangers to pay HMRC when the first tranche come in, mm-hmm. in October, right? But the point anyway is back in March, they should never have been in the first no. place because of the circumstances, and they only kept their place in it because of, if you like, what the UEFA were told by Rangers under Craig White. And one of the things that stopped what Rangers were told under Craig White coming out was that it couldn't be actually put out, you know, the information, you know, that said, look, you know, this was said and it wasn't true. It was because Craig White was up in court. And anything that came out could have risked prejudicing against mm-hmm. him, because it would have shown that he wasn't above porking.
Yeah.
You know, he wasn't above actually saying, well, actually, this, that. Although all he was doing was just repeating the mantra that was said
in
March.
Yeah, he just continued policy.
But the point there is that now that the court case is out of the road, there is no risk of actually prejudicing Craig White. And what will be shown is that the information, or if you like, the submissions put forward in June and September, both contain statements that are not true.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so it's there's dishonesty all the way through the process. But the point I was going to make was the SFA, and I can understand them wanting to keep a big support in the industry. Mm-hmm. The industry of football in Scotland couldn't afford to lose 40,000 match goers. And to that extent, the Rangers supporters, you know, and I can, you know, they have to lash. Somebody's got to be blamed for this. Mm-hmm. It certainly wasn't the SFA that were blamed for it. In fact, the SFA and the SPL did everything they possibly could to make sure that Rangers continued. Don't forget, the first proposal was to parachute them straight back in at the top. Mm-hmm. So that is out. But Rangers are a cash cow.
Mm-hmm.
And there's lots of people making lots of money, or where are lots of people making lots of money out of Rangers, and it wasn't the supporters.
Mm-hmm.
And it was the supporters that were paying it. So from that point of view, you know, they actually are the victims as well.
And I get that.
But there's a different element in it. But I'm just making the point.
No, I get that.
I'm not ignorant to why they feel aggrieved as well.
This was done to our club by the negligence of the SFA allowing yeah. it to happen. The counter to that would be they have shot every messenger.
Yes.
During the last 6 years.
There is that.
So you've only got yours. If you behave like that, yeah. I mean, they're the complete opposite of us. Yeah. We signed Johnny Hayes, and I'm reading on Twitter all these people bemoaning that we're not. They're lauding the fact that they've signed Jack from Aberdeen.
Aye.
We signed Hayes,
who was
their best player. Aye. And our fans are up in arms yeah. when people in the coaching, you know, I'm well aware that the attitude of Celtic is he's a squad player. So if our third choice player is Johnny Hayes instead of Gary Mackay-Stevens, then the quality of our squad's just gone up. But the point being, we're the exact opposite. We're, at times, I think, too readily we believe negativity about our club.
Yes. Yeah.
They, by their negligence, getting back to the participation of Johnson, etc., they, by their negligence,
yeah.
allowed their club to die
yeah.
by their behaviour when they got the warning signs.
Some psychologist has got a book to write on why the two mindsets are so different. I just don't.
In the modern world, when we live side by side in the city of Glasgow, it's not the segregation of.
But that's the point as well. I mean, you know. I played football with the guys that were Rangers supporters, and the book Bigger Defeat in Scotland. I tell them how I went to Ibrox, and I thought, wait a minute, I'm not singing songs I hate. I just left my mates on the other side, you know. But you can be the best of friends. But when it comes down to that part, but you cheated. Well, we didn't. You didn't. You know.
Their whole success in the 10 years prior to going bust. Every bit of their success was achieved by cheating, which gets back to the very basic principle of yeah, it'd be great to get their titles and share them out and put them back on, you know, the Olympics. I always go back to hearing something about 12 months ago about some athlete who came something like 8th in shot, women's shot put or something like that for the London Olympics, just got given a bronze medal because five people teared down. But I'm just quite happy for them to be
asterisk,
no trophy awarded.
Here's the other thing about the mindset, right? Had the media actually been honest themselves, and that's, there's dishonesty there all down the line, they've been given stuff and they've ignored it, they've been met and they've ignored what they were given. Why, I don't know. What's capping all that is another book.
I think it's for some of them, it's fears of getting their windows banged.
Well, exactly, and that's another factor as well. Is that, you know,
getting back to why the Rangers fans are culpable, because I know of a couple of journalists who've stopped taking it further because they've been visited by a special branch. Because of threats against them.
Exactly, and you know that. So as you say, they sort of shoot the messenger. So, but don't forget, not all Rangers supporters are like that.
No,
they're not all threatening, you know. But getting back to that point about the mindsets and the psychology of the thing, it's like, if I had been running a team, or if I had won something, and then I discovered that I'd won it by an unfair means, I wouldn't want to be associated with it.
Yeah?
That's just it. Why would you want to hold on to that? Why would you actually, why wouldn't you say, that was a bad period in our history, that's not who we are? And that's really the question. You know, who do we want to be? Is that what we want to be? Do we want to be associated with that? Is that, what do you call it, our value system? And why is it a value system? Because at the end of the day, it just gives a bit of bragging rights over our opposition.
And why would you want Alistair Johnson, for example, back in your club, when Alistair Johnson signed off accounts that said, not only were the accounts late, but he signed off accounts that said that there was a potential liability to HMRC when what's come out in the court case was it wasn't potential.
That's one of the key things. And going back to, if you like, the resolution side, I know we've wandered into other term. I mean, see, we've wandered off into other territory. What it goes back to is that what went on, there was dishonesty.
Yeah.
The people who were dishonest are still involved in the game. And for whatever reason, nobody actually wants to ask the questions. Is it a fear that if that dishonesty is unmasked, that Rangers Rangers can't actually be harmed by this?
Yeah.
Because the people who did it, and the club, company, whatever.
Well, that's one of the point.
Is no longer there.
That club.
So
that
why
club
don't you
exist?
Why don't you actually become? Why don't you become a new club in the sense of it's still Rangers playing out of Ibrox? There was a great chapter in the book, Biggest Football in Scotland, I think it's Alison McCulloch's lad's name, who actually did question some of the traditions and whether they serve Rangers well. And I don't think that they do. And I think that's when some of the harm, if you like, standing well back from it and looking at society as a whole, we actually had to say to himself, wait a minute, how much of this did we bring onto ourselves? How much of this are we still bringing onto ourselves, and what can we do about it? I'm a bit of an optimist in the sense that I'm a good finder, you know. I look for good in people, and I actually think that good exists in everybody. It's just that they do wrong by telling themselves they're doing right. I think a program up, you can only do that so you convince yourself you're doing right. But if you really stand back and think about what you're doing, look at the results it produces, you've got to say, wait a minute, how can this be right if I've now ended up where I am?
And
how can I change it so that it doesn't happen again? That's what I just don't understand.
And the issue here of nobody getting to the nub of it, nobody talking about the honesty, nobody coming out and saying, there was an issue here, we intentionally advantaged one club, we then didn't punish that club, and by then subsequently allowing, when a court case makes it clear that David Murray, Paul Murray, Dave King and Alistair Johnson were as culpable, although there's a bit of diminished responsibility for them and that they did at the very last second start flagging up some issues.
Yeah.
But they were culpable in the intentional cheating of Rangers.
Yeah.
That there are people connected to the SFA who also participated today. In today, who also participated. When you then have now, I'm assured that Alan McCrae, the president of the SFA, is an Aberdeen fan.
Aye.
But when you have the when the football fraternity of Scottish football know that the rules were bent, and everybody did everything they could to keep Rangers going.
But they
eventually go bust, and then people bend the rules and break the rules to pretend that it's the same Rangers. And then you have the president of the SFA coming out saying Celtic, it's not good for Scottish football that Celtic win things, it'd be much better if Rangers won some of them. What that immediately does, it's a bit like, it'd be a bit like a governor in the southern states of America. I mean, I know it's an exaggerated comparison, but it'd be like a governor in the southern states of America starting to talk about something that immediately say, hold on a minute, that sounds a bit like going back to the pre-60s days. Just back off.
It does, but there was an interesting comment on Twitter on that, and one welcome back says, define a strong Rangers. And one of the points is, there hasn't been a strong Rangers in the sense of, if you like, a Rangers who became strong without financial steroids.
Yeah.
So, a strong Rangers, and that's all everybody wants, is they just want to know that there's a club who are working to the same financial rules as everybody else, and living within their means, and not dependent on money coming from outside football, from God knows where, you know, who run by people who ran them into the ground before.
Yeah.
You know, and it's that is what do you mean by a strong Rangers? You know, now what will actually happen, I think, next season, depending on how good the purchases are, and we don't know that, is that Rangers might become strong enough to actually become the second place team, and that's where you get back into the old badness of it, is because what stops referees' decisions being controversial is being 30 odd points in front. If you're only 5 points in front, or 2 points in front, or 3 points in front, because Rangers aren't losing. I actually thought before last season started, I sat down and said, what will happen, I think, is that Celtic will take full points, or take full points at home against all the main competitors, and they will probably take full points away from 2 or 3 of them, and they'll draw the others. But Aberdeen, Hearts and Rangers will all
take points off each other
yeah. equally, and I thought it'll be a 14 point gap. That might happen next year, but I don't know about the strength of Hibs and Hearts and the rest of it, so it's hard to say at this point because you don't know the context of the teams. Aberdeen have been torn apart, so I don't know how they'll rebuild, but what you should get is a more competitive league, in the sense that Celtic won't end up whatever in front, 30 on points, but because it's a bit tighter. And this is what the media love as well, because you get the phone-ins, that referee decision, da-dee-da-dee-da-dee-da.
But my point is, when you've had a history of cheating, and some of the people who participated in that cheating are still in the SFA, and the president of the SFA then says, see the club who carry on the legacy of the cheating club, we'd like them to be doing better. Your hackles are raised, your suspicions are raised.
Of course your suspicions are raised, because what you're saying is that you're actually saying these people are dishonest, and you're telling us that, what do you know, are you telling us that a strong Rangers is a dishonest Rangers?
So the final thing, since this all kicked off with Resolution 12 to the Celtic board, and I get what I think Celtic's position might be, is that secretly Celtic are thinking, we are fed up that this has always got to be us, it's got to be us against, and it turns into us against them.
That's right.
But this is actually about Scottish football.
Yeah.
So I can see that's what Celtic's position might be. What do you think? What do you think Celtic's next steps, next position should be on this?
I think they actually have to take cognizance of the people who put a lot of money into Celtic over those years and feel they were cheated. I think if you ignore that, you're disservicing, and it's not just that. I always thought Celtic was a club who had ideals
and did the right thing.
That was one of the factors, you know, that sort of drew me to, you know, but once the kids were out of the way and all the rest of it was back, it was one of the things I liked. I thought, no, it's a club that by and large tries to do the right thing. I can remember my father telling me Hughie Maxwell signed with Celtic and he never quite made it, and he knew him in some way, and Celtic eventually he left. But my dad said, he says, no, he says, Hughie was like that. He says, no, he says, they were good to me, they looked after me. you know. And I always liked that, that they tended to sort of take care of people. And, you know, the foundation, all that stuff, you know, that whole shoot is about doing the right thing, you know. And Sally, they said, we never did anything wrong. And they were saying, well, no, you did do anything wrong, but you haven't done anything. You haven't done anything
you haven't made other
wrong.
People do right.
You haven't done something to correct or wrong, you know. And Scottish football has to realise that it is seen as being dishonest. And to not address that is a long-term risk, you know. In the short term, the gates are up, the football's terrific, you know, mm-hmm. and it's all there. But things go in cycles. And if there's that underlying dishonesty, why would people want to pay money to watch a game? Why don't they just go to the pub? And like other people who don't care whether the game's tainted or not, and I think there's an element of, well, put it this way, it's not that they don't care, that they accept that that's the nature of the game, and they'll still support Celtic, whatever. And I can well understand that, and I take my hats off them, because if it wasn't for them, I wouldn't have a team to watch and support.
Yeah.
So I can definitely understand that, you know. But there's an element of, like, self-respect, and it goes back to that point. See, if you do the right thing, see all the things that you fear might happen, they don't. My experience tells me that. All the things I thought, I could do this and do that, and then I thought, no, what's the right thing to do? And I think, in certain circumstances, I've done the right thing in my life. All the things I feared would happen when I was at that point, mm-hmm. that would have made me do the wrong thing, and I'll do the right thing. None of the fears ever materialised. I think the Scottish game could go from strength to strength if it's seen to be honest. If the rules are applied, if there's transparency, the point I'll make for an end is in the national club licensing rules. No, I don't spend my time going through this. I just Google and look at the time, and then I forget about it,
yep.
and then I go back and look again, you know. So, you know, it's, I just remember there's a point, then I can look it up. And it actually says in the section about what you. What clubs, when the clubs are asked for their financial situation as a table, and it's percentages of their turnover in that, it actually says you should know that this may be published on the SFA website. Now, I've yet to see that table for each club published that says this is their turnover and this is their wages and this is their wages and the ratio of their turnover,
yep.
and this is their profit and the rest of it. That is transparency. Mm-hmm. And to be fair to the SFA, they didn't introduce that a couple of years ago. That says this is what they're going to do, but I don't know if it's actually been done. And if I was the SFA, I would be coming back to people like me saying, "Aye, it's there," but I don't have to go around the, you know, on top of the cupboard and look across, you know, to find it. It's got to be in front of everybody.
Yeah, you go on the website, you click a button.
And the other side of it as well is, I think that taking it as the wages as a percentage of turnover is actually a false reading, because your turnover is, if you like, your turnover.
Yeah.
But if you've got high overheads in producing that turnover, that reduces the amount of disposable income you've then got to spend on paying players' wages. So I think that you have to take that into account as well. So it's not just, if you like, where the wages are, you know, a percentage.
Aye.
You've actually got to say, hang on a minute, in Rangers' case, they've got 40,000 season tickets, whatever it might be, they've got that amount of income, but the overheads are running Ibrox are fixed and they're heavy.
Yeah.
So you've got to take that off right away. And then you've got to see what's left, and then what's left. Is that enough to pay the wages of all the staff? Well, if you count the overheads and staff and that, what's left after doing all that? What is a sustainable wage bill for us? And it might be that it's not, you know, 10 million, it might be down to 6 million because you've taken that factor out. And it might even be that's the case, but I would like to see evidence of it. I would actually like folk to say, look, there's each club, there's their income, there's their turnover, there's their overheads, there's what's left. That's what what they can afford to spend in players. So basically the thing that if they can get legal investment as UEFA define it from outside,
mm-hmm.
well and good, because that's the whole point of FFP,
yeah.
is to make sure it's just money earned in football that's regenerated back into it. Well and good. That's the sort of initiatives that, and that's what a professional SFA would be doing. I've got a professional SFA, a bunch of amateurs. And they're like that because they're not accountable. You start making them accountable, they'll start becoming professional.
Okay, on that, I will see you all. Thanks very much. Let me tell you how it will be. There's one for you, 19 for me. I hope you enjoyed that podcast. Hope you got the information you were looking for from it. We can all decide what to do next. My general thought is it all necessarily Celtic's position? This is Scottish football. We've talked in the podcast there. This is about the defrauding of Scottish football. And the problem with it being taken forward by Celtic alone is that it then becomes a Celtic v Rangers thing and actually diminishes what actually happened. We really need to get the other football supporters on board. My other thoughts are we wait till the EBT case is finally determined in the way that I think it's going to be, but let it be finally, once and for all, and then you've got all the ducks in a row for taking it forward. Anyway, enough of me. There'll be more podcasts along soon. Got a brilliant podcast with Mark Cooper and Hullboy reviewing the season. Mark makes a tremendous faux pas. And we have Mark McCarthy, who playwright, author, producer, director, actor, who has brought to life the latest edition or the revived 50th anniversary edition of the Lions of Lisbon play, and gives us another brilliant insight into his world. So those two podcasts coming up, and then followed by the Celtic Underground Top 10 podcast. But I'll say, I hope you enjoyed that podcast with Old Heed. This is me, Harry Brady. That was him, Old Heed, saying good night and God bless. Good night. Declare the pennies on your eyes. Tax man. Cause I'm the tax man. Yeah, I'm the tax man. And you're working for no one but me.